Welcome. This is the UX Design Cast podcast series, and my name is Carl Vredenberg. This is episode number 37 in the series, and I'm delighted to have with me today David Hill, who is the Vice President of Lenovo Brand Management and Design. Welcome, David.
Thank you very much, Carl. It's good to talk to you again.
No, likewise. And I've been really looking forward to having this session together because you've been doing some very interesting work, I think, over the last numbers of years. And I wanted to, I know your background. We've known each other some time, but I wanted to ask if you could start today by giving sort of an overview of your background, you know, where you started, what educational background you have, the kind of companies you've worked with, the kind of work that you did, sort of leading up to, you know, where you are today at Lenovo. I wonder if you could just give us that kind of background.
Sure. I'll try to give you the synopsis, if you will. When I graduated from high school, I actually originally started to become an architect and studied architecture at Oklahoma State University for a few years, where I rather quickly discovered it wasn't exactly what I wanted to do. It seemed like it was much too much about statics and strengths of materials and lighting calculations and things of this nature, and not enough about the actual design of the building. And I was fortunate enough to meet an individual who was teaching a class in the evenings who was a professional industrial designer. I had never heard of this profession, didn't know really much about it other than the fact that it looked really interesting to me to design products, whether those be things as simple as a hammer or a cup, or as complex as a computer or a vehicle or something of that nature. I transferred really kind of midstream in my college career to the University of Kansas, where I studied industrial design and graduated there in the early 1980s. It was clearly the right decision for me. It was something I just kind of fell in love with and still love today. I love to design things, think about how people use them and where they use them and what they're trying to accomplish and how design can make them happier, either by delivering a superior experience or an aesthetic advantage, you know, something that looks great and makes people happy to use it. I've worked really mainly three places. I worked for a small design consulting firm immediately after college in Wichita, Kansas, where I get a great opportunity to design everything from underground trenching equipment to a bass boat, believe it or not. I even worked on the design of a hearse, which I blogged about once. But it was a great experience because I got to see so many different things and so many different kinds of clients and different design problems. From there, I went to IBM, where I worked in the mid-range computing business, and eventually became the manager of design for, at the time, IBM's AS400 division. Then I was asked to take over the responsibility for the design of IBM's personal computer business, where I really ran the design and human factors and ease of use of the entire personal computer portfolio, which included everything from servers to laptops. And from there, I went in the acquisition deal to Lenovo, and I've really been doing the same thing here, primarily focused on the Think branded offerings. I also have the additional responsibility of Lenovo corporate identity, which has been exciting for me. I've been able to participate in the design of everything from the business cards to the buildings that we work in. So it's kind of a long story, but maybe that's a little bit of background of interest.
A nice circular route in one way as well. When you mentioned the design of buildings, you're back to actually doing a little bit of architecture, perhaps.
Yeah, it is sort of interesting that it ended up that way. But we were able to make really some great strides, I think, in the design of the environment that we work in. And I think it's very important for a company, not only because it's a signal to the world of who we are, but it's an environment in which employees work. And it's a great, you know, it's like a three-dimensional experiential element of our brand.
It's really exciting to be taking on all that responsibility in the design of everything that has a surface, I guess, at Lenovo. I wonder if you could just, I know most people probably know what Lenovo is and what kinds of products it has, but maybe it'd be good to just provide a brief overview of the kind of focus of your design work and the kind of products that are included in the kinds of markets.
Sure. Well, Lenovo is really pretty much nearly 100% a personal computer business. We do have a cell phone business primarily in China. However, we make personal computers, everything from servers to tablets and notebook computers and desktops and monitors and all the peripherals and related software that you would expect to see with that. This is not so different from many of my experiences at IBM, with the one exception is that it's got laser focus on personal computing from a sort of a corporate perspective. You know, IBM had many, many distractions in the world of services and in large software projects and things of this in consulting. And, this is really much, we make computer PCs.
And you, in leading that design effort, it's great to hear that you're still hands-on with leading that work as well. I think that's also a sign of, significant success, I think, across the industry in the kinds of things that you're designing. But it obviously takes more than just you to do all of that. I wonder if you could just tell us a little about the kinds of people that work with you, the kind of people that work for you in perhaps the various disciplines that create that overall design.
Sure. For me, design is not just window dressing. It truly solves problems. And whether those problems be the problems of a corporation or the problems of an end user or both. And to do that kind of activity, you really need a team which brings to bear different disciplines and expertise. So specifically within my direction, I have people who are human factors experts, usability experts, industrial designers, graphic designers, and I work a great deal with brand strategists. And this work takes place really around the globe. It takes place in Japan, it takes place in China, it takes place in Europe and in the United States. And it's really a collaborative kind of team effort that I think maximizes the synergy which is possible amongst these design disciplines.
I wanted to ask you a little bit more about, how they in fact do work together, but you mentioned the worldwide nature of that team. My team at IBM is also very worldwide and traversing the time zones that take you to the other end of the clock. And I know that your teams do that as well. How do you deal with this fundamental problem that we haven't solved in the world yet, as far as I can tell, of time zones and also even the distance between those teams when you're doing something, as intimate as design often is?
Well, I think there's two ways to look at this. One is that the time zone difference is a negative, and the other that it's actually a positive.
Mm-hmm.
It's a negative in that you sometimes have to have very early morning phone calls or late morning calls or maybe talk on the weekend or things of that nature. So that's, somewhat of a negative that you have to get used to. But I think we've been pretty successful in trying to manage our lives in order to make that happen. Like for instance, on every Wednesday night, I have like three different conference calls and I've been doing that for almost 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've kind of got past that. But the positive aspect is you can work 24 hours a day on a problem. So, for instance, if a problem is identified here in the United States that we need a solution to, I can pass the problem over to my friends in Japan and have an answer in the morning, or have, three different approaches to the problem, or the ideas can be communicated. And so we can kind of play tag team between these two organizations. And that is the advantageous part, the problem-solving activity isn't just happening in one place.
Yeah, we have a similar experience, actually, David, to actually doing the design in North America. And then the development of this software that we're working on gets done in our overnight, and nobody has to work overtime. They just do their work in their daytime, and then you can review that design sort of the next day. I absolutely agree with you that there's huge value, and it probably offsets the challenges of still having to work at, or at least be on calls or video conferences or whatever at strange times. Now, when they do that work, the actual design work, I think you made the point that this isn't just window dressing, this isn't just the cover, this is the fundamental of what this product works like. What disciplines, you mentioned the disciplines that you've got, how do they work together? And maybe you can even use a recent project as an example just to illustrate, where do you start? You know, who does what next? And how does a product come to be and come to have the great design that your team actually creates for Lenovo products?
Well, one of the things that I work very hard to instill in my team is that we are all designers.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't like, you know, calling these different functions, you know, like, well, these are the design guys and these are the human factors guys and these are the graphic design people. And to me, it's all design. We're mm-hmm. all designing something. We're trying to shape something. One person might come at this from a different perspective than another. One person may have a different expertise than another, but collectively, we're all trying to shape the design of this thing, whether it be hardware or some software that's related to the computer. Mm-hmm. So I try very hard to ensure that we're all sensitive to our own disciplines and wants and needs and goals, but that we have this respect for each other. And I think I've nurtured this kind of teamwork in a way that people know when they're in someone else's backyard, if you will, and they're respectful of that. And also, we've learned a lot from each other. So, you know, I didn't get a lot of guys in human factors that I'm sure 10 years ago people would have said, well, you know, those guys, you know, dress funny and you know, don't know anything about art or things like that. I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've been in so many meetings with the industrial designers or graphic designers that they have an appreciation for it. They kind of know what each one is thinking without even really having to say it. And that really comes from time and from respect and from, I believe, an environment that cultivates the idea of cross-pollination.
What you're also saying is you got clusters of skills that may well have had educational background in a variety of areas, but when they gel as a team, and as you say, you've had a lot of these people for some significant years, that they've really gotten to the point where they know when to rely on deeper skills that one person may have, but they also all are now starting to collect and understand the variety of perspectives.
Yeah, part of that comes from the team being mature.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing each other. I mean, some of the people on my team I have known or worked with for over 20 years. That's a long time. So,
yeah.
You know, I know everything about them. They know a lot about me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just part of the chemistry that helps us to do this.
So you also do then the sort of the hardware design as well as the software design as well. I know you've also got software because I use it.
Yeah, my team works on both the hardware and software from a design, use, feel, behavior perspective.
And where does it start? Do you start with a sort of a concept? Do you go create a really early conceptual prototype? Can you just give us an idea of, without necessarily getting into great detail, but just an idea, especially for people that may not know what, you know, hardware design is like. I think people that listen to this podcast series often have, you know, expertise in the software side, perhaps don't have as much insight into what goes into the design of a notebook computer, for example.
Well, first off, when designing anything, I don't believe that there's such a thing as being involved too early.
Mm-hmm.
Designers need to be involved at the onset of the creation of an idea of a product. And many times, designers, in fact, have an idea for a product. So I have personally suggested new product categories that we have taken to market that were totally design driven initially.
Mm-hmm.
And other times, you know, somebody comes in and has a new flat panel monitor with a different size screen that we have to put in a enclosure and make it work right and look right and be ergonomic. And that's, you know, a totally different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But in all these cases, being involved upfront and early is very critical. And prototyping, creating a simple model or mock-up, whether it's made out of paper, foam core, wood, it doesn't make any difference. Anything that can simulate the appearance and how a person would use or interact with it and how they perceive it, is extraordinarily important. And I think it is part of what separates the design discipline from many others, the ability to get physical and truly see something and take it out of just your imagination into something that you can see and touch and feel.
So when you take one of these ideas, and maybe even the ones that you had talked about that you've come up with straight from a design perspective, and you see them all the way through, can you give us an example of products recently? I know I've certainly heard from the CES, that the Consumer Electronics Show, that you had products there that were quite a hit in terms of truly being, you know, novel in the way that you're pulling together various functions into ways of pulling together a computer that is very different from what anybody else is doing, it seems, in the industry. Maybe you could describe a little, if you could, a little bit about what kinds of ideas go into those kinds of innovations, because those ones aren't just straight, let's just design it so that it looks good and that it works well with people. You've actually got some breakthrough type innovative thinking going on there as well. I wonder if you would just describe a little bit of that.
Sure. For me, there are a couple different kinds of breakthrough ideas. Breakthrough ideas can be seemingly small in nature, or they can be big. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example of a small one. This is maybe, I'm trying to even remember the dates, maybe it's almost 10 years ago now, we introduced a feature on a ThinkPad called the ThinkLight.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this idea came out of a brainstorming session that was conducted at the time. We were going to make a ThinkPad for more end users, and if it came to market as the I series. And we had this brainstorming session thinking about what were frustrations, you know, the people experienced with using computers. And one of the ones that came top of mind to myself was I just come back from Japan on an international flight, and I was trying to do some work on the plane, and the guy next to me was trying to sleep, and I couldn't see my keyboard, and I'm, you know, debating about should I turn on the overhead light. And so I turned it on. The guy looked at me like I was a jerk. And so then I turned it back off again, and I'm trying to move the screen so I can see the keyboard. And I thought to myself, gee, wouldn't it be great if there was something like one of those little book lights that I could, you know, just clip on the screen of my computer and I could see the keys. And so I mentioned this in this brainstorming session, and somebody said, well, why don't we just build a book light into the ThinkPad?
Mm-hmm.
And it was, so we modeled it. And so we get the model from Yamato, and we'd built a little LED in it and a flashlight battery, and we had a little crude switch. And we went into this closet we had, a fairly small closet where you could turn off all the lights, and mm-hmm. turned this thing on, and voila, you could see the keyboard. And I mentioned this to Adalio Sanchez, who at the time was running the ThinkPad business, told him we wanted to make this thing and how much it was going to cost and all this. And he just looked at me and said, come on, that can't possibly work. And I said, Adalio, it does work. Follow me.
Mm-hmm.
He said, okay. So we went down there, and you know, I locked myself in this closet with the general manager of ThinkPad and closed the door and turned the lights off, turned on the little switch we had rigged up. And he looked at it and he said, okay, so it works. Let's do it. and the whole thing was predicated, I believe, on the strength of having a model that demonstrated the ability of what this thing would really do. And, you know, we made it. And it's a very useful feature. So that's a kind of a small microcosm, if you will, of how I think innovation works, and it can certainly work at a bigger level as well.
In fact, I use that feature, that ThinkLight, all the time. I thought it was really innovative at the time. And it's an example, too, I think, as you tell that story of something that, you know, in hindsight, you look at, well, of course, duh, we should have one of these. But, you know, nobody did, you know,
no.
Before that time. And it's hugely valuable to use. But it's that classic instance of true innovation in terms of it really being valuable and useful.
Yeah, and it has nothing to do with the speeds and feeds and the terabytes and all of this kind of stuff that people normally associate with computer innovation. It's a light bulb.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's that simple.
Yeah, but it solves a problem that people have had for a long time in a simple and elegant way, which is fundamentally what a lot of product innovation really is all about. Now, you've had a distinguished career in design over all the years that you've done this. And this is, you know, one example of some innovation that you've put out. I wonder if you could let us know what, when you look back at your career, what kinds of things come to your mind that you're particularly proud of as a designer?
Well, there are several, I think. One is I'm very proud of the work that I did in collaboration with others early on to define the look of what has basically become the look of servers in the computer industry. Early in my career, the servers, they all sort of looked like refrigerators with louvers in them. They're sort of indiscriminate, beige, boring-looking things.
Mm-hmm.
We transformed them into black, powerful forms that communicated exactly what they were. They had very purposeful air ventilations and latches to pull out hard files and these kind of bold geometries. And really, we made them look like what the time is. I said, you know, I want it to look like the engine in a race car.
Mm-hmm.
It's all beautifully laid out, and you immediately understand, you know, where the pieces and parts are. And I'm proud of that work because it really became the look of all of the IBM servers.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it still exists today, and it's permeated across the entire industry, whether you're talking about IBM servers or Lenovo servers or servers made by some other company. So I'm proud of that. It's had staying power. And I think it was an important thing. The other that is that stands out in my mind is really the establishment and maintenance of the ThinkPad design strategy as one of evolution rather than planned obsolescence. When I took over the design of ThinkPad in 1995, ThinkPad was really a mere 3 years old. It was pretty much in its infancy, and I can vividly remember a meeting I had with a gentleman who was running the ThinkPad business at the time, and he told me that it was time to come up with a brand new design for ThinkPad. And I looked at him and I said, "So why do you think we need that?" And he said, "Well, because it's going to be 3 years old." And I said, "Well, is there something wrong with it other than the fact that it's 3 years old? I mean, is there a problem I'm trying to solve? Because I don't think it makes sense to just make it different. I think we should make it better," which is very much aligned with the way many European car manufacturers treat the design of their vehicles. There's a legacy, there's a continuity, there's a thread of a design DNA that runs through them. And I had some pretty significant arguments with a lot of powerful people who were convinced that we needed to move forward with a completely different design. Maybe it's not black, maybe it's not rectangular, maybe it's some other shape, you know, it's who knows what. And I was able to really to fight that off and through hard work demonstrate that we could improve the breed without necessarily having to kill the horse. And I'm proud of that because I think we created over the years a tremendous amount of brand equity because ThinkPad is clearly more than just a name. ThinkPad is a name. It's a brand, it's a design. And I don't think there is a competitor in the industry that can make such a strong claim.
And you're also carrying that design ethic, that design signature through in the work that you're doing in Lenovo with continuing on with that brand as well. And so I think it's still distinctive. I think it's still coming forward on a regular basis that if you see one of these, you know exactly what it is. So I think that's right. A testament to having achieved, quite frankly, that level of design contribution.
It's not perfect, but few things are. So, you know, we're always on the hunt for what's the next idea mm-hmm. that we can use either to improve the user experience or improve something about the fit and finish or improve something about the design. And so that's a tall order. It makes it much more difficult than I'm sure, you know, guys sitting around saying, "Hey, what are we going to make this thing look like this year?"
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can assure you there's no one sitting in the Jeep design studio trying to figure out what the next, you know, Jeep looks like. Or there's nobody sitting around at Ray-Ban trying to figure out what are the next Wayfarers going to look like. They're not going to do that.
Right, right. On that topic, in terms of where these technologies are going, you know, we're seeing some pretty exciting trends happening, I think, in the industry. So we've got a number of different user interface models being sort of introduced, some that have been around for a long time, but are starting to get, you know, pretty mature. And a lot of people are paying a lot of attention to them as well. And these include, you know, natural interfaces like touch and a variety of other ones as well. I'd appreciate hearing your thoughts on, you know, where are these technologies going? What might the user interface to or the user experience with the kinds of devices that you'll be producing, you know, in the next few years might actually look like from a user's point of view?
Sure. I think one of the important points about the evolution and revolution of computing is that I believe we've seen sort of the shift of computing go from being stationary, as in desktop computer, to the movement of computers which are portable, such as ThinkPad. And I think the next big thing is the ability to use computers while you were, in fact, in transit. So this is a big idea, I think. And I think it's really important because, you know, a ThinkPad is an object that you know, you're not always looking for a power outlet as you were 15 years ago. You know, they used to have pretty bad battery life, and so now they have great battery life. Now they have all kinds of wireless connectivity, but you know, you really can't use it unless you land somewhere. You know, you have to be sitting in a chair or on a sofa or in bed or somewhere. And I think that you're seeing a lot of things changing in user interface design and in objects and behaviors that could potentially allow us to use computers and the power of information, you know, while you're walking down the street or driving in your car. I think those are just complete sort of the natural evolution, if you will, of how you would gather information and use it.
And I would imagine also the way that you actually interact with them, right? So
yes,
you now have, you know, voice as an input or an output or audio. You have touch and many more of these, you know, natural ways of interacting with these devices that are now with you all the time. As you say, you're no longer, you know, connected. You can be connected anywhere. What's your sense of even the disciplines that we have, the collection of skills that we apply to the design effort? What kinds of challenges are there in pushing forward in a time frame that certainly feels to me like we're constantly on a cusp of a brand new focus on importance of design, importance of the user experience getting much and much and much more important as we go? How do you see the disciplines and design in general changing over the next while in terms of its importance, in terms of, you know, how it leads in terms of design for new products?
Definitely, I believe that we are sort of living in the era of design as being a powerful tool for business. You know, I go back and I think about IBM and the legacy that IBM had in the world of design. They had a design program that started in the early 1950s. And I've told people this many, many times. You know, IBM was kind of first in town with a big, you know, corporate design program, and design was important to the company, et cetera. But it was in the era that they could have sold anything. I mean, great, they had these wonderful products and these wonderful design consultants and great design, but they had such world dominance and market share and technical leadership that it really didn't make any difference. I mean, they could have sold anything. It could have been a computer in a cardboard box, and they could have sold it. Now, design, because it brings to bear imagination and new ways of interacting with things, and can create emotion. That in a world now where there's so much competition, and you know, so many people think these things have turned into commodities, which I do not believe is true. Design is, I think, at the forefront and is extraordinarily useful to a company and ultimately to a consumer who can deliver these kinds of user experiences and products that can spark your imagination and hopefully change your life and make you happier and you know, fall in love with products.
Very, very true. And there's another trend that's also been around that has been variously called Web 2.0 that involves, you know, a variety of different technologies and practices that have transformed the way that we as humans deal with one another. And the format that we're using today of a podcast is included in that category. And so is blogging. And having been on the web looking to see what you've been up to recently, David, you are certainly an avid blogger. And I just wanted to ask you, you know, your experience in being a blogger, and especially as a designer, and how you use it, what your experience is from it, value that you get from blogging.
Well, I would have to say that early on in the blogging discussion, I was somewhat of a skeptic and the reluctant blogger. A good friend of mine at Lenovo, who's responsible for social media, came to me one day and scheduled a meeting and to talk about blogging. And he went through this kind of big spiel about blogging, and I'm listening patiently. And finally, I looked at him and said, "So why am I here?" And he said, "I'd like you to be the first official Lenovo blogger." And I said, "You're kidding me." And he said, "No, I'm serious. You're very articulate when you talk about design. I'm sure that you can write as well as you can talk. You're entertaining, and I think you could do this." And I said, "Okay, well, what happens now?" and so I did have some requirements in the beginning. I told him I wanted to design the page, because I said, if this is going to be a representation of myself, it has to have my own twist to the design of the page. He said, "No problem." And I said, "And so this means I really write it, right?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "So what are the rules?" He said, "There aren't any." I said, "Okay, then I'll do it." And there really were no rules for me, other than, you know, just don't do anything stupid. But I quickly found that it was kind of a creative outlet, that it allowed me to express my own thinking about design. I could write about my various experiences that I've had with design. I've talked many times about things that I worked on the design of. In fact, some of them before I ever even worked for IBM. If you go on my blog, you can read the story of the design of the hearse that I worked on. You know, there's all kinds of things that I put on there that I never really thought I would have a vehicle to tell anybody these stories, and it's been kind of fun. The other piece of this is that I've used the blog to get information from customers. So I started this initially with a poll. So I asked to have a capability of putting a poll up so I could ask people, you know, a simple question about some preference with regard to the design of a ThinkPad. You know, do they like the power connector on the side or the back, for instance? And, you know, the next thing I know, I'm getting like thousands of people chiming in with their responses. And I thought, this is amazing. This is like free information. Mm-hmm. You know, I just write two paragraphs, pose a question, and within 3 days, I've got 1,000 respondents not only clicking off answers on the poll, but typing in hundreds of comments. This is like gold. So I took it a step further, and then we started developing surveys. So if we had a more complex question, I'd sort of pose the question and identify that we had created a web survey. And if you go to this website, you can take the survey. So, you know, here again, we're just like mining this data, and we really use it. So it's not, you know, like we just make this up. Like, here's a great example for you. We were going to refresh this external ThinkPad keyboard, which is a USB-attached keyboard that has a track point in it. It looks just like a ThinkPad keyboard. We were going to make a new one because we had updated some of the things on the keyboard and we wanted to have it match. And so it was a lot of debate about, should we include a trackpad on this keyboard or not? And should we have the numpad on it? And I thought, well, this is easy. I'll post a blog about it. I'll put up a survey about it. And we collected thousands of respondents' feedback on this. And we used the information to make the decision. And so we made this this keyboard without the touchpad and without the numpad. because it was exactly what people asked for. So then when we announced it, I put a blog about, you know, here it is. This is the keyboard you helped design. And it is the most popular blog I have ever written in my entire career as a Lenovo blogger. And to me, that sends a message that if you listen to people and you deliver on what it is that they want, and you certainly add your own twist from a innovation and design perspective, but it's basically giving the people what they want. And the fact that you asked them and the fact that you then told them you gave them what they wanted is extremely powerful.
It really does actually enable the conversation, and the conversation not just with a single user, like you say, with thousands at the same time, and connected in a way that in many ways in the past we didn't really have the methods for. We've found that it's good in a design sense that way of sharing design options. Whenever the team has a choice of doing this, this, or the other, you go and blog about it. Or increasingly, I've been using Twitter and little Twitter polls as well to get insights. So I think it's an amazing environment. I've certainly enjoyed using it. And I think you're obviously making very effective and very successful use, you know, of it as well. Now, if somebody wanted to go and read that blog, how would they find their way to it?
I would go to the Lenovo blogs. / Design Matters, and just do a search on keyboard you helped design, and you will go you'll go to that particular blog.
Excellent.
There are hundreds of comments on it. There is one thing people still ask for, and that's a wireless version. We haven't given up on that, but there are some technical challenges associated with it. It's really a fantastic tool. It's a tool, like I say, to gather information, to have a conversation with people, and it's real. You know, I don't have like an office with 10 guys in the back room writing this stuff for me. I write it. It's all me.
It's really the transformation of how to do design and being that much more effectively connected, you know, with your audience and with your users and your customers. So a great success story there. And I will include the URL that you mentioned in the show notes for this session as well. Now, before we finish up, I just wanted to ask if there was anything that I didn't ask you about, since I'm the one asking all the questions here, that you may think you might want to still cover, that others that are listening to this about Lenovo and about David Hill, you know, may want to know about, or have we covered pretty well everything?
Boy, I think you've covered just about everything. You get everything from my my childhood aspirations to, you know, what I've been doing to the last week, it seems like.
All right. Well, this has been a great session, David, and it's nice to reconnect with you again. We spent much more time working with one another back when your organization was part of IBM. But as everybody knows, and as you mentioned, there was really a splitting off of the IBM company of the very interesting product set that you helped design while at IBM and have been shepherding ever so well since the connecting with Lenovo. And so I want to thank you for this session on behalf of everybody listening to this as well. Also encourage anybody that wants to follow up with regard to the show notes for this. Those are available at UXDesigncast.com. You can also provide any comments that you might have on this or any of the episodes in this series if you go into iTunes, into the search bar, and just search for UX Design Cast, and you will then be brought to the page within iTunes. There's a similar one that's available in the Zune marketplace as well. So, David, thanks so much for this, and thanks to everyone else who's been listening to this all, and we'll talk to you all next time.
You're more than welcome, Carl.
Okay, great. Thanks, David.